got the thumbs up.
We got the thumbs up?
Yeah.
Was that the thumb? We're thumbing.
Wow. Okay. This is normally your job. You are pretty thin this morning.
In rough shape. We had a night. But wait, I got my skit.
Right. Yes.
We do skits.
We do skits.
Because we love our viewers and we are not selling out to the man.
We have a core of freed up fanatics.
Freed up fanatics.
They got the posters in the room. They have the tattoos we discussed.
On their balls.
No, we said no balls.
Okay.
If you have it on your balls, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But we don't, do the skits.
Don't undo it now.
We do the skits for these freaks.
Yes.
So why don't you proceed?
Okay. So you know how sometimes I sneak into your apartment while you're asleep and to fuck with you, you know, rearrange the things in your apartment.
Yeah, put price stickers on everything.
And I also, I force feed you ice cream while you're sleeping because...
You do this.
You know, because I'm insane and I'm the one with sex appeal. This is my show. I'm the star.
Yeah.
So well, I got to force feed you ice cream to fatten you up.
Right.
That's what I'm always doing.
After forcing me to develop bulimia in the first place.
Right, right. It's in and
it's
out.
Sickening.
You just, you know, you're sometimes drugged. I usually drug your coffee while you're at work so that you fall asleep early. And then, yeah, I stick the ice cream, and then if you just caress the throat, you swallow the ice cream. So it's great. And I set fire to your curtains and things like that. So anyway, I was doing that the other day.
These skits have gotten a little dark.
Well, no, it has a purpose. So I'm explaining why I was at your place.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were unconscious, and you got a call on your cell phone,
mm-hmm.
and I decided to answer it. As I sometimes do, because sometimes I sign you up for fake scamming type things.
This feels a little bit of a violation of my privacy. I didn't mind the drugging and forced feeding.
But you don't like when I answer the phone and pretend to be you. I'm like, hello, Ayatollah Christian Brischke here.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Donald Trump calling to say, you know, this is the last chance you got. It was just before 8 o'clock. And you fell asleep early because you were drugged.
Yeah.
This is the last chance you have to negotiate. And I said, oh, well yeah, let's do a ceasefire. Sure. He's like, you got to give me everything I want. It's got to be... You know, made all these demands. I want the straight. I'm like, I just want the gay. You can have the straight. I don't care. So we had
very good,
perfectly fine. I gave them everything they wanted because I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretending to be you. And so that's why there's this confusion now, because now they're talking to the real Iranian negotiators and they're like, well, we never agreed to any of this.
Right.
And so that's a long way of saying it's your fault. Fat, sad sack of shit.
You're the one who put me in this position in the first place.
Well,
and now,
that's what some people are saying.
Oh, this is making me long for the days where my only problems were a few fraud charges.
Yeah,
now
I know. It just keeps getting...
Now I'm an obese dictator with no real power. It's terrible.
Kim Jong-nam, right? Or Jong-un? What's his name?
Kim Jong-un. Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Jong-nam is the sister? Brother? Somebody?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I thought
Jong Nam was a joke about me being drugged.
Jong Nam style.
Oh, very good.
That's a great. That's a great song.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like a fun pop song. It's actually in like the Korean context is very political, right? It's making fun of Gangnam with the Gangnam
You just
style,
have to make
right?
everything political.
No, it's true. It's true. It's about like the rich neighborhood in Seoul and how they're, you know.
Oh, I see.
Assholes
playing the race card already.
Yeah.
So what do we think of this little ceasefire? Ceasefire.
That didn't hold. That held for like a half a minute and then collapsed.
Well, because Israel wants to fight a war against Lebanon anyway.
Right.
And there was confusion as to whether the ceasefire covered that.
It means that you have
Because it didn't come up in my phone call.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's clearly the problem when you have multiple parties on your side who have conflicting interests, right?
Mm-hmm.
As we talked about last time, it's just like more evidence of how Trump just like, even if he wants to, you know, the whole like taco Trump thing, Trump always chickens out is what that stands for, that he'll do some big announcement and then the impending implementation date is coming up and then he completely backs off. And he's done this before.
But I find that framing kind of insulting. Like, he, from his perspective, he is the world's greatest negotiator and deal maker. So, yes, he says something bold and some kind of big demand, and then he backs down from it because it's his bargaining strategy.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I think
people
that's...
People are like, blown away that he's not doing follow through, but he's doing high stakes negotiating from his perspective.
Yeah. And I mean, that's not an insane way to negotiate.
Right.
That's you bluff
right.
and then you pull it back at
right.
the last moment. Right.
right.
In order to wring right. out some concessions. I mean, the problem with it from our perspective, right, is that
I will kill you unless you go get me a donut right now.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
I will fucking do it.
Okay,
I will tear you apart.
Then I go to get the donut and you don't kill me. And
right.
It's like, wow.
Yeah. Oh, I tacoed out.
Yeah, right.
I could still kill you.
Yeah, but
maybe
is...
I will.
Okay. So two thoughts though. The taco often comes up in the context of things that he shouldn't be doing high stakes negotiations about in the first place, like the tariffs or whatever.
Right.
It's like
they're a bad
gonna,
idea.
We're not going to get anything from this. And so even if like in his mind, the negotiations work to produce
sure.
some sort of concessions, none of the drama was worth it in the first place. Right. Then the second thing is we're in it is interesting to hear Democrats jump on the taco phrase, though, because it's like they really can't decide how they want to criticize Trump, because on the one hand, they want to make fun of him and mock him. But on the other hand, want to paint him as incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
And so it's like if, you know, to give your, you know, donut analogy, if you were holding a knife to my throat, being like, go get me a donut, and you're a deranged, crazy man,
mm-hmm.
I sincerely believe that you're just about to kill me right here in this podcast booth. And then I were to say, nah, pussy, you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it.
I might do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's kind of, that's where Democrats find themselves with this taco
the
allegation.
Demon rats.
But.
Demo craps.
Can we say the C word? On
dummy.
The demo.
Oh.
I don't know if we're allowed to.
Oh.
I don't know if we,
no.
we're not FCC regulated.
We drew the line at retarded. We decided we can say that sometimes.
Sometimes.
Not as many times as people say it.
Not
wow.
as many times as U.S. senators and,
right,
right. you know,
respected political figures.
Pundits,
yeah.
But at least once per episode.
Once
maybe.
Per episode. Okay.
Per person.
Okay. Per quarter. Per.
Has it been 15 minutes?
Yeah.
I want to say it so bad.
Oh.
No. But this, okay, so here's the problem is whether taco is a good criticism of Trump's negotiating tactics, whether he's actually a master negotiator, he's not the only one making decisions right now, right? He's entered into a situation where the Iranians get a veto, the Israelis get a veto, and so he can't, even if he does want to immediately
mm-hmm.
fold in the service of some concession he's pulled out of a hat, he can't, right? This is going to keep going. As we talked about last time, the Iranians have an incentive to keep things going because they want to make this as painful as possible. Israel loves to have this keep going, right? Because
right?
they're not really getting hit. And it gives, you know, while the war is ongoing, they have an opportunity to do all the, what they see as house cleaning around the neighborhood, keep bombing Hezbollah and whatever else, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, they're not particularly interested in an immediate end to this war either. And so even as Trump wants to get out of this, he like can't. And then also, I mean, this happened a bunch when it came to the Gaza ceasefire, right? Is like
yeah.
both sides say they have a ceasefire agreement, and then they both release their independent plans to try to like force the other to like conform to their side of the agreement, right?
Yeah.
And that's what happened here, and it fell apart immediately.
Mm.
So I think we're in this for a long haul.
Oof.
Right? You know, Trump, you know, as much as he wants to just get out of this quickly, it's not his decision solely anymore. And if I can confess, this is a bad attitude.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's important as a political pundit, writer, prognosticator to recognize when you feel something for bad reasons. And this is how I feel a little bit. I have a little bit of sick pleasure watching Trump try to bully his way into this situation and then find himself unable to extricate himself quickly from it.
That's
right?
amusing to you.
A little bit. It feels like just desserts, right?
Mm-hmm.
His entire presidency thus far has been, I'm going to push the button and make people do what I want with the tariffs, with Venezuela, even the Greenland stuff. It's
right.
just like this bully slapping people in the face.
He enjoys exercising power.
Yes. He enjoys pushing people around.
Yeah.
And he bit off more than he could chew with this Iran situation, and now he's flailing. And
right, what if the other side is just willing to absorb that the pain,
the punishment,
and the punishment?
Yeah, right. Particularly when you are trying, you're an existential threat to them. Of course, they're willing to.
That's why we can't. I questioned going to. I mean, we basically threatened nuclear warfare against them.
We said we would end their civilization.
Right, and they kind of said, "Okay,
what do we have to
lose? So then, what do we do?
Yeah,
and I don't like the idea of repeatedly making that threat
yeah.
and then actually not carrying it out.
Oh,
because that, our enemies yeah. will start to feel like, well, they're never going to actually do it. They're not going to do the actual thing.
Right.
I don't want Russia to feel that way about us. I don't want China to feel that way about us as it's looking at the island of Taiwan.
Right.
We shouldn't make, you know, don't write checks you can't
cash.
Cash, is that the, thank you. I butchered the expression.
Yeah, don't let your mouth write
checks that your butt can't
cash. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's irresponsible. It's kind of, in a way, it's...
Like in World War II, we said, surrender to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't surrender. We bombed them.
Yeah.
We said, surrender immediately. They said, we're going to think about it. We bombed them again. And they said, okay, we surrender.
Right.
Right? Yeah. That's how it's done.
You create... Yeah, you're eroding your own credible... Your threat becomes less credible.
Right.
And then...
But I don't want us to do this, so we shouldn't... We just shouldn't have threatened it in the first place.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But now it also sets up maybe 10 years from now, when yeah. people are studying this crisis, they're like, oh, well, people always, you know, Trump always chickens out.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's deep into his fourth term now. And so, you know, the nuclear saber rattling is nonsense.
This is not fun anymore.
No, you know? I told myself, I kept saying that during the election, the 2024 election.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the second time I'm going to...
You're going to enjoy it.
I'm going to enjoy it yeah. more. And I tried. I really tried. And
I tried to.
Darn it, I can't anymore. You know, Gene Healy, his cover story for Reason Magazine this month is about, he kind of compares Trump 1 and Trump 2. Gene Healy, a former longtime scholar of executive power at the Cato Institute.
Yes.
Great book called The Cult of the Presidency.
Yes.
Great cover story too. But he's an expert on the presidency and executive power. And he talks about how in the first Trump term there was this like panic about how Trump was a dictator, and he talked often like you know, a bullying authoritarian, but he basically
governed within the
like a normal
Republican president,
yeah. right? And so for all the freak out, it was misplaced, right? The second term. No, he's just doing it.
He's
right?
doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he mentions, I mean, there's so many things you forget from the first Trump administration, but like when he tweeted, like, American companies are hereby ordered to remove themselves from China, right? Mm-hmm. And this was like a whole day news story about, oh, the president is ordering companies out of, nothing happened, right? Yeah. But now with the tariffs, like, that actually is,
yeah.
like, we are getting closer to policy literally by tweet or Truth Social. And so while I guess what I'm saying is I missed the opportunity to find Trump more amusing.
He's also now a little bit he's mired in foreign policy issues.
Yeah, he's got some good late presidential
yeah.
second term problems,
they always
right?
eventually get absorbed by, and some people will say that's because of the pressure that Israel exerts, but they always end up hyper fixated on a conflict in the Middle East. Why? That no one really wants at best or is interested in.
Right.
Well, this is what's... I mean, from a voter's interest standpoint, from like a journalistic stamp. I don't know. Why are we doing this? Why are we talking about this?
It's been so completely surreal as just a citizen.
Yeah.
Watching this thing
again.
Play. Yeah. Play out, yeah, just like it's like the fourth season of a show you stopped watching. Right?
I don't like the storylines of this. I miss the classic stuff. I was sitting around with some guys yesterday having birthday drinks for a friend, and you know, all right of center people, and
mm-hmm.
you know, they were talking. The Masters was on. We were watching the Masters, which is great.
This is a real fraternal.
Yeah, okay. Kind of aging men, kind mm-hmm. of, you know, Rory McIlroy, love him. One of my yeah. favorite athletes. He's great.
I didn't realize you were a golf guy.
Yeah. I'm a golf fan. Okay. I care about Michigan football,
mm-hmm.
Although I'm glad our basketball team won the tournament. That's great. And golf. Those are the only two things I have any interest in whatsoever, sports-wise. We're, you know,
surprisingly adult interest for you.
I'm an adult human being, oddly enough, now. Yeah, and that and, you know, anime and Pokemon are my main, yeah. my main and K-pop.
Finish
your so we're sitting, you know, we're watching golf, drinking a beer, you know, a little bit of that, and we're talking about, you know, Middle East wars, and I'm like, I don't have much to, like, I miss, remember DEI, remember wokeness?
Yeah.
I was like, what if somebody, can we talk about like someone getting shut down on a campus who's trying to say something controversial. Remember the good old days?
Well, Robbie, would you let a Nazi speak on the
campus?
Yeah, right?
Oh, yes!
Where do you draw the line?
Yeah. Oh, I do have thoughts on that.
But you free know, speech doesn't necessarily mean my... I have my freedom to criticize as well. Yeah,
it's like they're not playing my music on the radio right now. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. This is not my song.
It's not my song, and it's not. And I don't really even have a getting really philosophical here. Like I don't, you know, as I've gotten older and developed as a journalist from someone who mostly writes about specific areas of policy interest, higher education, tech. To a kind of general opinion commentator and news host, more of a generalist, you know, you just got to go with the flow. Like you're housing policy.
Yeah.
And you're talking about housing policy. I mean, you'd write about other stuff too, but you know, that's your baby. Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing. And you're doing that kind of regardless of what the you know, national so this narratives actually, are. But I, like, I don't have a, I don't have a beat anymore.
You don't have a beat to ground you.
Yeah.
You know, I
just
got to
go with the... With the flow.
I hope this isn't, you know, raising the curtain too much, but I remember when Charlie Kirk was assassinated. You know, I'm working on
by Israel, right? Yeah, course,
it's terrible that they did that, but allegedly.
Yeah. Candace is going to get to the bottom of it.
Well, but see, the fortune, I remember because I was working on, I have a weekly housing newsletter called Rent Free, which I encourage everyone to sign up for. But I was deep in the weeds covering some wonky California reforms to their environmental laws that make it difficult to build housing. I look over to Twitter. I see this horrible news. I see already the flood of commentary and yelling and Israel accusations. And I'm like, I'm going to go back to my day job.
Yeah, you...
I'm just going to focus on this, and I don't have to worry about that. That's nice. How that's nice part about having a wonky beat. And there's a lot happening on that beat as well. Probably not super interesting to our freed up fanatics, but it is nice. It is nice.
It's nice to have a beat. Should I pick something new? Because then it was COVID. For what was just kind of all
that was
of our
great.
Beats.
That was great. Yeah.
You and I were particularly interested
in the lockdowns,
in that kind of stuff.
The vaccine mandates, the vaccine compensation stuff.
Right. That was a rare
the
for
lab
me.
Leak stuff.
Yes. Yeah. A situation where I was interested in a story mostly because it was affecting me, you know, with mandates and things, and it was trying to ruin our lives. And
came
so
through
I was
your front door, right?
Pushing back against actual tyranny that's affecting me.
So many of, you know, our contemporaries, our peers were completely fine with, and you were an insane person. Yeah, right. You were an insane person if you wanted to do things like step outside your home and go to the grocery store without wearing a mask.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the land of the blind, that's,
but that's
what we were.
Yeah, we were.
We dared people to see.
Right.
Open your eyes and see. And they said, no, no.
They rejected his message. Yeah.
Yes.
I remember coming into politics. You know, I first started getting interested, not professionally, but as like, this is the thing that I care about. And like 2011, 2012, 2013. And so for a good like 4-year chunk there, the dominant conversations were like the size of government, budget deficits, police abuse.
And remember when police abuse wasn't even left coded?
No.
You could care about it as a right-leaning person even.
Yes.
You didn't have to. I remember writing a bunch of police abuse stories for the Daily Caller when I wrote for the Daily Caller before I joined Reason. That was back in 2012.
Yep.
And police abuse stories performed like gangbusters for their website at the time because it wasn't. It was because it didn't yet have, frankly, a racial coding.
Yes, right.
And that was the biggest tactical mistake ever made by an activist movement, was to turn the cause of criminal justice reform into a race issue, like to consciously portray it as something that only affects Black people.
Because then you're not arguing about government abuse. You're arguing about race relations.
Well, and you made people who otherwise would have listened to it, who were listening to it, who were interested in it, say, oh, wait, that's a racism thing. Well, I don't really think, you know, race, you know, you're always hawking racism. It made those people, you know, their hair stand up.
Yeah, I remember pretty clearly, like, the people who were the biggest, like, fuck the police people in, like, the Republican circles in college. Yeah. quickly transitioned to being the most pro-Trump people. Yeah, they either stayed dyed-in-the-wool libertarians or they just completely abandoned all of that. But okay, look, you're a little downbeat, I understand, because of the war.
And I'm
it's very surreal, and you're very hungover. Yeah. Ah, damn it. Well, we stopped the competition, right? Where people are supposed to guess which one of us is more hungover.
I think
we're not making it too hard. Let me pick up your spirits.
Okay. We're doing a little game.
Yes, we're gonna do a little game. And you can play along at home too, audience. Let me pull up my screen here.
Okay.
So the war is officially called, Operation Epic Fury.
Yes.
There was some reporting, who knows how real, that Trump, you know, picked it, saw it on the page and picked this immediately, right?
These names.
But it's
Eternal Darkness.
It's been supplemented by the Israeli operation in Lebanon called Eternal Darkness.
Right. And I was thinking like, man, these names, what, Operation Avenged Sevenfold, you know, Operation, this is better than sex. Operation, I can only get turned on if I get caught in the act of cross-dressing, right? Like, this is some sick sexual stuff.
I hadn't heard that last one, but yeah, that's how we got into Vietnam.
Yeah.
So we're going to play a little bit of game.
Yeah.
Because you were commenting on this in the office, and, you know, you had mentioned, you know, that these sound like metal album names, and as a big fan of metal music, decided to play a little game where I'm going to read you, two names,
okay.
Right? And you're going to tell me which one is the military operation.
Okay.
The actual military operation.
Okay.
Real one. These are all real.
Okay.
And which one is the metal.
Okay.
Album. Okay.
This is great.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to start with kind of an easy one.
Okay.
First. Okay. So you got Ride the Lightning, Rolling Thunder.
Oh my God. This is so hard.
Are you serious?
Operation Rolling Thunder is a real military operation.
Yes, yes. Very good. That is when we bombed North Vietnam.
Right.
Ride the Lightning, obviously, I believe second Metallica album, my favorite.
I know that.
Okay, here we go. Number two.
Okay.
It's starting to get a little harder. Get a little harder, maybe. Okay. Deliberate Force, Vulgar Display of Power.
Oh my God. there was not an Operation Vulgar Display of Power.
Okay, very good.
That's
very
gotta
good.
Be. That was a metal band.
Yeah. So that's
album.
That is the album by Pantera. It is I was about to say it's their second album, but that's not really true. They have like three like glam metal albums that have been completely memory-holed, and then they transitioned to being more of a traditional metal band.
And what was the military operation?
Yes, Deliberate Force. That was some operation in the 90s in Iraq post first Iraq War. Okay, you're getting pretty good.
Okay,
here we go. How about this one? Warrior's Rage and Berserker.
Oh, God. Operation Warrior's Rage, Operation Berserker. Now these are just Dungeons and Dragons classes. I want to play as a berserker.
The Venn diagram of Dungeons and Dragons players, heavy metal listeners, and military operations namers is a flat
pretty,
circle.
Yeah. These do sound like abilities your character has in the 5th edition. Warrior's Rage and Berserker.
Yeah.
I think Berserker is the band.
Yes, very good. Okay. Yeah, so it's a album by Amon Amarth, great Swedish melodic death metal band. Uh-huh. And then Warrior's Rage was a operation during the Second Iraq War to capture insurgents.
Warrior's Rage. Yeah, that gives that has a Freedom Fries kind of patriot,
sure.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Can picture Pete Hegseth standing up there and being like, Operation Warrior's Rage was a resounding success.
Right.
It was amazing. It was beautiful.
Now let me do 100 push-ups.
Yeah,
poorly.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess he wouldn't pick Berserker because that's a little too pagan for him and his weird Calvinist beliefs.
Oh, yeah. Mock the Calvinism. Yeah. That was the Catholic in you just came out, this false religion. It was so Catholic, what you just said.
He'd probably be Pika Hegseth would have me thrown in jail for this Marian
his preacher
cover.
Would.
Yeah, right.
Oh,
This wouldn't be allowed. This would be a little too much paganism.
Yeah, not in their America.
Pika Hegseth. Okay, we're getting off track here.
Yes.
Now. Although it was predetermined that we'll make fun of the Calvinists. Oh, we're all sinners. But okay, here we go. This one's going to be pretty hard. Okay. You got, so on the one hand, you have vigilant warrior. And then on the other hand, you have honor, valor, pride.
Honor, valor, pride has to be the operation.
False.
What?
I gotcha. Yeah. You got okay. Me. Yeah. So Honor, Valor, Pride is the album by a British death metal band called Bolt Thrower.
Oh my God.
Who a lot of their music is about like Warhammer 40K or whatever else. And then Vigilant Warrior, that was another Iraq operation, sub operation, part of one of the
Warrior?
Wars. Yeah, can you believe that? Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Do we want to
okay,
do
you got me. No, keep going.
You like
keep
this?
Going.
Okay,
oh,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
We're
yeah,
having
yeah,
fun.
Okay, okay. Let's see here. Okay, you got Gothic Serpent, Blast Tyrant.
Whew. Gothic Serpent and Blast Tyrant.
Yeah.
Those are both good. Gothic Serpent has to be the metal band.
Wrong again.
No, they
yes.
named something Gothic Serpent.
This was the Black Hawk Down operation.
It was called Gothic
it's
Serpent.
Called Gothic Serpent. Yeah. Yeah. In Somalia, in Mogadishu,
what in the
to go, yeah, to go
Harry
capture.
Potter and the Prisoner yeah, of Azkaban right. is that. The Gothic Serpent is yeah. Slytherin's monster.
Yeah. No. Well, they were trying to capture this this one militia leader, and so I guess maybe he's the Gothic
oh
Serpent.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
What's the other one?
Blast Tyrant. That's a Clutch album. It's my favorite band, my favorite album, honestly. So I would recommend listening to that Blast while Tyrant. You read up on Operation Goth Serpent.
Keep
you
want to cocksucker?
Yeah. anyway, okay, so we're gonna do one more?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. We got Burning Arrow, Burning Bridges.
Operation Burning Arrow sounds like that's a military operation.
Yep, that was Vietnam, very good. Burning Bridges, arch enemy.
That's what we were doing there, burning bridges.
That's
so,
true. Yeah, and villages, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I got one more on the list.
Okay.
Red Dawn. Versus Blaze in the Northern Sky.
I think Red Dawn is the operation.
Yes.
That sounds familiar.
Very good. Yep, that's the one they used to get Saddam.
Yes.
Blaze in the Northern Sky, obviously, you know, one of the seminal black metal albums from band Dark Throne.
Obviously.
So I don't have a, this one isn't a pair, but I'll give it to you and you tell me metal album
Hit
or
me.
Operation. It's called Speak English or Die.
Tell me that's the metal.
Yeah. That's an album by the band
Speak English
Storm
or
Troopers.
Die would be a little Storm too Troopers on the nose, Death. Even for the War Department of Pete Hegseth.
It's funny because they that band, Stormtroopers of Death, they also have a song that's called Fuck the Middle East. But I was restricting myself to the albums for the purpose
okay.
of this game. So.
Okay.
But
amazing.
Yeah. Okay.
Amazing.
You did pretty well. You did pretty well. Better than I was expecting, honestly. So. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. You listen to much metal? You're not a metal guy.
No. Yeah. I'm not even a music guy, to be perfectly frank.
That's right.
I don't consume a lot of music. I listen mostly to video game soundtracks.
Yeah.
Honestly, remixes of video game soundtracks, yeah. like Final Fantasy. As I was writing my novel, I had to have on this kind of almost winter mix of Final Fantasy 9 and 10. That's what I had to have on.
Okay.
I love video game music. And then in terms of actual music, I like, I just like rock from when I was a kid. And so rock from the early 90s through the 2010s. Like when I'm in the car, I turn on the radio, I put on it's not classic. I like the classic rock too, but like rock of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
Real basic.
Yeah.
I'm an old man, like I said. I just want to watch golf and talk about how my back hurts and,
Very good. Very good. Yeah, I don't listen to I don't listen to too much music when I write because I find it a little distracting. But sometimes I do. And normally it's, a Monomarth or a Bolt Thrower, like something fast paced. Melodic and that I can't really understand the vocals too well.
Yeah, especially
then
if
I feel like then I feel like a real Viking warrior sitting at my computer, you know, slaying demons by writing paragraphs.
I can't listen to anything with lyrics with vocals mm-hmm. if I'm if I'm writing. Yeah. It's got to be just background. That's why video game music I find so good for that. It's just background music.
Right. Totally. Yeah, I've been... It's really tanked my productivity because of the Afro Man controversy. I've been going back and listening to some of his hits while working, but it's rap, and so I just get distracted by the lyrics. So.
You got yourself a Mac laptop.
I did. Finally. I switched. You I transitioned. Switch. Yeah. It feels a little bit like being in another country.
Yeah.
Being on a Mac laptop. Yeah. So I don't know if viewers could see it from previous tapings, I had a gigantic PC laptop, which I bought during COVID with the purpose of playing video games while we were locked up by Dr. Fauci. That is now 6 years old.
We're allowed to leave our homes again.
Yeah, we're allowed to go outside.
Yeah.
And so having to carry that thing around has become a real
pain. So wait,
that
thing still works?
It's slowing down a lot.
Okay, because I actually need to acquire, I've found out, a PC.
For
laptop for gaming. I think I mentioned this. I have this desire. I mentioned it on some podcast. I want to play the Zelda randomizer. And I consulted my brother finally on how I need to do this. It's very complicated. I need to like download a thing, and I need to do, I think, illegal things to obtain like torrenting. Remember that whole thing?
Oh yeah, man.
But
those were really the good old days.
Do it on a Mac laptop. So I'm honestly going to buy a compatible laptop just so I can ruin it with like viruses so I can play the randomizer. It's this custom made Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time and Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask, my two favorite games from my childhood for the Nintendo 64, and they combined them and they shuffled what's in every treasure box. So every time you play, it's different.
Huh.
So, you know, the classic Zelda game, you know, you go, you have a treasure box, has a key, you mm-hmm. open a door, door has another treasure box, has the bow and arrow, you're going through a maze, basically, mm-hmm. of like, I got this item, so now I can do this. I got this item, so now I can do this. Mm-hmm. I actually like linear games. They get a bad rap. Now everything's so open world and
yeah,
you go
right,
out. I like following a more narrow pathway.
You've given me a task to complete.
Yeah, yeah. I like doing it that way. Yeah. But so they've shuffled what's in every treasure box. So now you do the game in a different order. You do it every time.
Mm-hmm.
It's different every time. So mm-hmm. I really want to play it. I watch people speed run it.
Yeah.
That's what I do now while I eat lunch, while I'm supposed to be working.
Yeah.
So, but I need to get a whole new laptop to
play.
Well,
here, if you talk about it on the podcast, it was prep for the podcast.
Right, right, yeah. Right. That's work.
Right.
When I'm just playing video games all day,
it's work.
I'm working.
It might look like I'm jacking off there, but I'm actually working.
They say that in Mad Men. We won't do a whole Mad Men thing again. We've said enough. But
they have to be unproductive to be productive.
Right, somebody says, I always forget. I think Roger says it to Don. I always forget that when you're working, it looks like you're doing nothing.
Yeah. Right. He had another line where he's like, I made my job look too easy. Mm-hmm. People don't think I don't do anything.
Yep. 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 Oh.
Sometimes that's true. That's the that's kind of the satire of Office Space, right? Is the corporate guys come in and they actually are starting to...
What is it that you do around here?
Right. And he's just bad at explaining it in the meeting, but he actually does fulfill a useful function and they fire him nonetheless.
That was a great movie.
It really is. Yeah. It's
stupid ending. The idea that the main character will like enjoy construction work, working with his hands, being outdoors, that's some kind of improvement.
This was...
Is dumb. And doesn't hold up, in my view.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a theme of
the 90s.
Yeah, is that offices are drab,
alienating,
and boring, and monotonous. Yes, alienating, and you're better off pursuing some unrealistic passion that you have,
which is kind of a Marxist idea, a little bit.
Yeah, the regimentation of the factory,
right,
or whatever else, right? Yeah, there's
the alienation of man from his own labor.
Right.
Like if you're out working, you build your own chair. It's
right.
not the commodification of your labor is
right.
that's what
right.
Marxism wants to avoid, right? They want
right.
you to build. I'm like, this is retarded, the idea yeah. that you would have to like build everything yourself instead of have people who are good at building things build that and then sell them for money is
right.
an obviously superior system that Marxists have some problem with for some reason. But
right, right. Yeah, I mean, maybe like offices have gotten better too.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, We care more about like having brightly lit spaces, outdoor light getting in.
Open floor plans and free coffee and
Right. They had those depressing cubicles, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I've never worked in a cubicle.
No.
So
we've always worked in reasons and
basically just worked here.
So. Open office.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, journalists usually don't have in like, you know, newsrooms, right?
Yeah.
It's usually a couple offices, maybe for higher ranking editor people, but mostly, you know, people are always in open spaces together.
Right. Or out on the streets, pavement pounding, streets. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see an AI do that.
Yeah.
Go interview somebody.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Not that I've, you know, done any real actual original reporting in a while, but I could. And you can't clanker.
Hey, you know, you gotta go out into the world to remember how nice it is back at back home, right?
In the Take Factory.
I was out in California. I won't get too into it because the story is forthcoming. Mm. But I was out in California for a story. It has to do with California's squatting problem, squatters who invade homes, and then it takes forever to kick them out. So I was there on the ground covering some of that. It makes you appreciate being back,
having a home.
Having a home that I pay rent for and am legally allowed to operate, and then am not at risk of grenade explosions and sword strikes and whatever else when I sit in the office. So
you know what else I wanted to mention?
Yeah, what's that?
There are, and this is going to be a very hypocritical thing for me to say, there are just too many podcasts. You know, everybody wants a podcast. Mm. RFK Jr. just announced he's starting a podcast.
Yeah. It's become the new press release.
Like every member
of
Congress wants to have their own podcast. No one listens to them. I mean, they listen to Ted Cruz has been successful at this.
Yeah.
They all want to have podcasts. You know, giant tech people who have a gazillion dollars all want to start a podcast. Everybody just wants a podcast.
Right.
And I think only those of us of the elite cast, only the priesthood.
We're the guild masters,
yes.
Right? Looking at these journeymen start.
We
their
should
own
break
operation.
Their knees,
right? Yeah. Well, surely there's got to be some special, maybe. But then they would still be able to podcast. That's the problem. They can just sit in the chair and do the podcast with the broken knees, right? Yeah.
Okay.
So how do you?
We rip out their tongues with hot pincers.
You really are hungover.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean...
Welcome to hell, bitch. How will you talk on your podcast with no tongue?
Another
great... Are you looking for this? like Neo in The Matrix. That's another office.
Another monotonous office.
There was that. The Matrix is like that. Fight Club is like that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Does Fight Club hold up? Have you seen that movie in a while?
I haven't. I remember when I first watched it, I found it kind of off-putting and
fashy. I loved
it. It's a fashy movie.
Yeah, I didn't appreciate it as fashy when I first saw it. I was too young.
Yeah, it's men who feel emasculated by drab liberal corporatism.
Right.
And so recover their lost masculinity through violence.
Right, yeah.
And, yeah.
It was a gay fascism.
Yeah, was it? Yeah,
it's
I guess.
It's homoerotic in a way.
I guess, yeah. I mean, I didn't pick up on those things.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I was thinking of...
You're like the Onion film critic.
God, that guy is the funniest. Rosenthal or whatever his name is. Oh, he's so good. That was a line from him that I said to you earlier in this podcast. Keep him coming, cocksucker. That's what he says in the one about reviewing the superhero movies.
This is
how I get off. You think this is my paycheck? I can do this in my sleep.
I watched the fake morning show that they
that had I recommended.
So I watched I saw the clip where they have the like Kesha parody and their, like booty waves song.
Isn't that so good?
Yeah, and they're like, oh, you make us look forward to the end of civilization now.
And it was it was predictive.
Yeah,
that was like years before Kesha exists.
They called it. The one I still I don't
an avatar of our rapacious corporate overlords.
The one I cannot get out of my head is a product of a sick, sick mind is the porking around.
Yes.
Almost movie that they made. Cause it's like,
I told you about this. It's so
like,
good.
You did. It was a great recommendation. Only a sick, sick person could sick. Enjoy it. But it's about, if you watch the Onion parody videos, it's a Jim Haggerty, who's from the morning show, has like a Food Network show called Porkin' Across America.
It's so good.
Where he's going to go eat pork in all the 50 states. And through the process of going, like his life starts to fall apart as he does the show.
And his Kafkaesque metamorphosis into a pig.
Yeah, he starts getting afflicted with all these incredibly gruesome injuries that are then fixed by like pig skin grafts and he is transferred into it. And it's so funny because it's just like, it actually is like kind of like a smart horror comedy.
Yes.
When he's like the Pigmaster General at the, the festival, and he's like almost completed his transformation into a pig, and he just has to kill the pig named Jim, and that's his name. And it's like, by killing the pig named Jim, he forfeits his last shred of humanity.
Yes.
And it's like, damn it. It's like, watching that made me think like maybe nihilism actually is real.
Yeah.
If a like Onion Food Network parody show can be such an incisive, like existential comedy.
God, but they were really cooking back in those days.
Where does that genius come from?
I don't even know. It was so good. Now they have, you know, they unfortunately got bought by woke libs.
Oh, Ben Collins. That fucking.
We don't like him at all. Yeah, he's
a misinformation reporter.
Paranoid. Right, conspiratorial man. I don't care for him.
Yeah.
He somehow
acquired
the
annoying conspiracy from the center, right?
Yes.
I'm the reasonable NBC reporter who's completely freaked out about how everything's a giant conspiracy.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, like, I saw, oh my God, it was so it was pathologically unfunny. People were talking about it earlier this week. J.K. Rowling escapes from prison was the...
Or the asylum or something?
Or the asylum. No, I think it was from... what was even... It's because she's so crazy?
Yeah.
By expressing views that a majority of the world population agree with about sex and gender.
Yeah.
You know, she's a normal centrist lib with some popularly supported views on... That I don't even necessarily say I co-signed, but they're not at all beyond the... She's not crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of the books is about a guy escaping from prison. Was that the...
No, it has nothing to do with that.
I don't know.
It has nothing to do with that.
You know, it's funny. It's funny watching how people, by just like staying the same, become like, you know, the world moves around them and they become on, they end up on different sides of the culture war, right? So for a while, Harry Potter was... at least kind of like a evangelical
boogeyman,
right? Yeah, it's witchcraft. Kids shouldn't read these books. It's bad and Satanist.
Which is the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah, it's very dumb. Yeah. It's more of a talk about Calvinists, right? Yeah. Catholics, we could suck them down. But but then, so she was kind of like a left, you know, kind of like religious right boogeyman for a while.
Right.
Not the whole religious right, but there was some criticism of her from that quarters. Then as the religious right fades, but then kind of the gender wars start to pick up, right? Mm-hmm. She's still a conservative, a focus of conservative criticism because she's like retconning a lot of homosexuality into the books, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, Dumbledore is gay, right?
Yes.
And Grindelwald or whatever, they're banging, right?
Yes.
And so then that got a lot of pushback.
In the kind of prequel things, the Fantastic Beasts, they do sort of give some meat to that idea. And I think it ends up being fine, but it was very clumsy for the original series to just say, oh, and by the way, Dumbledore's gay.
Right. It's also...
It's not,
you know,
suggested
at a certain point,
in the narrative
at
all.
It's like you're familiar with the term death of the author, right? Mm-hmm. Like at a certain point, like a work exists for the readers and it's, you know, we have built up images in our own head of who these characters are. So it's not really for you to come back and tell me who the, you know...
Right.
Dumbledore's sexuality. I will figure that out for myself.
Right. and maybe next your own.
Yeah. As I work through these books and a few issues myself, right?
Oh.
But still a right-wing boogeyman. Yeah. And then the trans stuff started and she became a right-wing hero. And all the leftists had to decide that they actually hated Harry Potter all along.
Yeah.
So, alas.
Speaking of kind of childhood things. So over the, weekend for Easter, I was back at my mom's place in Michigan, Grand Rapids. Me and the better half. My brother lives there. He's got two little girls. Very nice Easter. The little girls like Pokemon. They pretend they're Pokemon, and we were watching a little bit of the cartoon, the anime show, the Ash Ketchum, that you know I remember from when I was a kid that I love. And it's just, and my mom was saying it was so nice. I remember you being a little kid watching this show, and now you're a grown up sitting on the couch with your nieces, and they're loving. And it's like, this is a that's nice. This is a thing that generations of kids
transcend generations.
And I'm watching it, and you know, it really does have a very family and kid friendly message, because in the show, a lot of the there is a cleverness to the show. It has some kind of adult humor in it. But it's also, the message is very, you know, be good stewards of your neighbors and of animals. Like, it's funny that the criticism of Pokemon or that show was, it's like dog fighting or something. Because actually, it's not really...
Do people have a problem with dog fighting?
But it's not about, it's not like animal cruelty, because it's a...
Because they get off on it.
No, because they don't. You don't fight with your Pokemon to the point of death. And they don't fight against their. They want to do this. Mm-hmm. This is like what they're. I don't know. Genetically, it's in their Pokemon DNA.
Like pit bulls. Yeah.
But by better understanding and by having better friendship with his Pokemon, Ash is more competitive in the sport of Pokemon combat. And that's a good, I think that's a good message.
Yeah, that is good.
It promotes friendship and understanding. And also the world of Pokemon is very odd. There's no government as far as I can tell. There are police. And it's very a localized government where you just, and you go, you know, you turn 11 or 14, I don't know how old he's supposed to be. I can't remember. And you just wander the countryside. Counting on the kindness of strangers and doing free... It's a kind of anarcho-libertarian thing.
I mean, of course, we both have this perception. But yeah, so I haven't watched the cartoon too much. But I did, with my niece, I watched Detective Pikachu.
Oh, great movie.
I love
that movie.
And that was exactly my takeaway, too, is like it is this kind of like liberal urban utopia, right? It's like part... San Francisco, part Tokyo, part New York, right? And so it's just like a really interesting portrayal of an urban environment that, you know, like cities oftentimes are portrayed as kind of like hellscapes or alienating. And it's not. It's an inviting and mysterious place. So I really like that aspect of the movie. And yeah, the Pokemon, they're just... again, I don't know if this how much this tracks to the show, but they're odd, right? Because they're not quite pets and they're not quite pests. They're just like kind of like around.
But they want to help. They're not pests because they're useful.
Right, exactly. They're benevolent and they're not gross, right?
They want your love and appreciation and affection.
Right.
And they want to help you, serve you, promote your interests. It's a great mutual voluntary thing.
Yeah, they're benevolent.
Yes.
Yeah. So
I mean, sometimes if they're not benevolent, it reflects something in their owner.
The person, maybe.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Who mistreats them.
Right.
Some of them are I mean, Mewtwo, right? His whole, the villain of so much Pokemon is a kind of Frankenstein's monster type character who doesn't understand who questions his existence and so on. There are some heavy concept, a little heavy, you know, for a children's show.
Yeah, do you remember when Herman Cain, back in 2012, was running for the Republican nomination for president, and when he dropped out, he quoted the Pokemon movie, which features Mewtwo significantly, but he was like quoting the like theme song. And Jon Stewart made a lot of fun of him for this because he's like, it's not even the most inspiring lines in the movie, because Mewtwo has like a monologue where he's like, you know, whatever, you know, background you come from, you can still, you know.
He says something like, I will seek what your heart already knows to be true, or something like that. and then meanwhile, he just did anime battle with this cute little cat monster.
No. It's adorable.
It's great.
Yeah,
it's
so what are the elements of that allow a work like that, Pokemon, to transcend generations?
That's a question.
Is it? It has to. It's got to have both
memorable characters.
Memorable characters.
Team Rocket is hilarious. You know, the antics of them are very funny.
Yeah, it's
rewatchable
be,
for adults.
Yeah, it's got to. I think so. These are two things that must be very difficult as someone trying to make like media for children.
Right.
Is like you want to have something that's smart enough that adults can watch it and put it on
without wanting to blow their brains out.
Right. But not, you know, Phantom Menace,
right.
Trade dispute,
right.
Complexity that the children will then completely
is
miss.
It
right.
Legal?
And then also, yeah, you want, you do want a story, and story requires conflict, but without it getting too dark.
Right.
Right. Like, I was more of a, I never played the Pokemon cards. I collected Yu-Gi-Oh cards instead.
Mm.
And Yu-Gi-Oh is, that's, maybe it was always less popular.
Is that
but,
the top spinning one?
No, it was a card. It was a card game. I don't think there was tops. But it was much darker, the cartoon. Mm. And I think that's probably why it was less popular and didn't transcend.
I watched some of the Pokemon copycat, Digimon. Did
yeah,
you watch
sure.
that? That
yeah.
was a weird one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Monster Rancher. I really liked Monster Rancher. That was an odd television show. The 90s, man. Just watch, you know, turning on the TV on a Saturday morning, weird cartoon stuff. Some of the, like, the comic book character shows of that era were great. The Batman
animated
cartoon
series, yeah.
from the 90s is so good in its many iterations.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very good.
Did you ever read actual newspaper comics as a child?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. I like the Peanuts.
Okay. Interesting. It's
yeah.
a classic, yeah.
Yeah.
So we were a big Calvin and Hobbes family.
Yeah.
Got all the books. Yeah. That's a guy who, he's an interesting character, Bill Watterson, who did the Calvin and Hobbes, because he like, this never happens in media ever. He got to a point where he was like, I think I've had all I have to say with Calvin and Hobbes. I'm stopping it, and I'm going to go be a recluse in Michigan. Not in like a Ted Kaczynski way, just like, I have nothing more to say. Leave me alone. Like, okay.
More people should do that.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
I liked The Far Side.
Oh,
big Far
yeah.
Side
those
fan.
Are great.
Those are great.
Yeah.
Had a little Far Side calendar.
Yeah, the little Tara.
Oh,
oh,
love those.
Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I liked, well, he just died. Scott Adams.
Dilbert.
Dilbert. Love
yeah.
Dilbert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is someone who should have gone to the
odd.
And...
Interesting. Interesting, man. Well, yeah.
I don't have to speak ill of the dead.
No, I wouldn't even speak ill of him. I thought he was interesting to listen to.
He's an interesting character. He's an
yes.
interesting character. The everyone should read the Slate Star Codex.
It's a great post.
Obituary about his career.
I
trajectory.
Found his voice pleasant to listen to. He had some kind of quality. Like, I understand why he had such a cult following, even in terms of his increasingly a little bit unhinged commentary online. But
yeah.
there was something like... That I liked tuning in for it, and I like just having it on for some reason.
It's
I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
We shall not see his light again.
What else? You said you saw The Substance.
Ooh,
what is that?
Yeah. You never saw it?
Don't know it.
Okay, so I'm just going to say spoilers.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Because I'll try not to spoil everything.
Okay.
But,
is it a movie?
So it is a movie. It's a film. Demi Moore. And basically she, gets this mysterious substance. She's, like aging, the actress and...
Oh, I missed this.
That's, yeah.
Okay.
I'm telling you all about it.
Okay.
So she's an aging actress, like has like some fitness show, right? They fire her for being too old, right?
Classic woman problem.
Yeah. Well, this is what's okay. We'll get into that. But then she finds this substance that basically allows a younger version of a younger body to leap out of her body and live for a week, right? But then she has to transfer back to the old body over time, and this sets up increasingly dark and absurd.
It's like a Black Mirror
body.
Kind of
yeah, but it gets really off the rails in a disgusting body horror kind of way. But in a way that, you know, the body horror is ultimately just aging over time. But no, I thought it was really good. It's really interesting style of a movie. A lot of like close claustrophobic shots and I don't know, bright colors and synthesizers. And it's a lot of fun.
Are you a body horror guy?
Not normally, no.
Yeah.
you know, like I like the Alien movies, maybe in spite of some of the body mm-hmm. horror aspects. So it kind of turns me off. That's why I like listening to death metal instead.
Yeah.
It's like I can control it in my mind a little bit. I don't have to see your disgusting stuff. Yeah. So I don't seek out gore horror.
I don't either.
But I mean, but in part, you know, maybe the one of the reasons I avoid it is because it is actually a very effective form of horror, right? And this one was done in a smart way, right? Everyone has you know, concerns about growing old, right? And so that was kind of like, that was, well, that's what was funny about the movie. Is
I'm
like,
going to drug you yeah. and stuff your face full of ice cream tonight. Oh.
Yeah, you got to stop that.
Yeah.
Just make it the low calorie.
Okay.
One.
No, break the point.
Yeah. No, that was like the commentary on the movie was a lot about like, oh, it's showing how Hollywood disrespects, you know, women and, you know, at a certain point as an older woman, you're just kind of discarded by society. I'm like,
right.
All right. So like that is like a critique in the movie, but it's like, oh, it's about the uniquely female experience of growing old. Like, come on. I think it has a little wider applicability.
That's how when they're always like, you know, women's media or like media aimed at little girls promotes like unrealistic body standard. Like look the way Barbie looks.
Yeah, never yeah. happens to
look
men.
Look at He-Man.
Yeah.
Like, is that not an unrealistic body standard?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. But it is
Terminator,
true.
Terminator, you know?
It is true
it's
that...
unrealistic to expect me to have a pulsating laser eye coming right. out of my head. And yeah, this is what, yeah, this is what yeah, the message young men get.
But I think women, you know, lose a kind of power and agents as they get, where men gain more power and status as they, or there's a little bit less, you know, older men can still, who have a lot of financial resources, can still sleep with young, pretty younger and younger women.
Mm-hmm.
And the reverse, well, I mean, there's nothing to say it couldn't happen or doesn't happen or isn't true, but it's not portrayed as commonly, I guess, in media because
they
it probably
give,
isn't.
They should give it a go.
Yeah, so cougars.
It's out there.
Unleash the cougars.
The archetype is out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the funny, I don't know if this was intentional or well, what exactly they were trying
well,
to get
Demi
at.
Well, Demi Moore was famously someone dating a much younger man
right?
for
yeah.
a long time.
Well, that's what's funny about her being cast in this role to begin with is she's like, I mean,
incredibly
I don't know
exactly, beautiful.
Yeah, she's, yeah.
stunningly beautiful still
right,
at her age.
Even
yeah.
in her late 50s or even
right.
60s, right? I don't know exactly how old she is.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Well, people just don't age as much anymore because we now have, or at the celebrity level, at the elite level, like.
Plastic surgery has gotten so much better.
Or just like.
Healthcare.
Putting on lotion or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I think doing the bare minimum is more like you look at like, you know, Ewan McGregor is, I think, almost the same age as the guy who played Obi-Wan Kenobi in the original Star Wars. I mean, he's not there yet, but he doesn't look like an old man.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tom Cruise has looked the same for 50 years.
Yeah. What
Jennifer Lopez is like 800 years old.
Right.
She looks
great.
Yeah. Amazing. It's
what explains this? Is it?
I think it's just people know how to knowing the bare minimum. I mean, these are very wealthy, powerful people, so they
right.
can have whole teams of you're right. But some of the plastic surgery that people are getting makes them look weird and older, and they should stop doing that.
You know,
too much of the face stuff. Do you know when the face is smushed? I don't like it at all. It looks weird.
Yeah. Sorry, I was worried that was going to turn into a Bane voice, but. I see that hand creeping towards the face.
Like Jim Carrey, they said he'd been replaced.
Mm-hmm.
There was a rumor going on that
he'd
been killed and replaced.
Surgery?
He looks, yes.
People are so stupid.
Yeah, well, yeah. Because he looks different. You haven't seen him in public in a while, but he clearly had some kind of plastic surgery and it looks not good.
That's ironic given that like his entire comedy is just him doing weird things
with
his
face.
Right?
Yeah.
You know who... I hate to objectify anyone, but I'm just saying, you know, age gracefully, you know,
yeah.
you're all beautiful angels, but
exactly.
Who's had some very noticeable amount of plastic surgery and maybe an excessive amount. It was Courtney Cox. I saw the Scream 7.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it was a little bit of a,
that's
it was a little jarring.
Yeah.
It was a little jarring. Yeah.
Yeah. It's everybody needs to lay off it a little bit more than they're doing.
Yeah.
I think it's getting a little carried away.
Do you know Lindy Man on Twitter?
I know they count, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not different from Lindy West.
Yes.
Who's that?
I believe so.
Polyamorous, the polyamory book.
go ahead.
I don't know anything about that.
The death grasp of millennial feminism. Anyway.
Polyamory.
Lindy West, particularly.
Although I'm sure he'd say, Lindy Man would say, because Lindy is like ancient, right? Mm-hmm. So he's always describing things as Lindy or not Lindy, right? Like,
this is like a Bronze Age pervert type.
Yeah, but he's not like a right-wing fanatic.
Okay.
It's a little more pleasant cultural commentary.
Sure.
So like, you know, purposeful exercise. That's not Lindy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Because you should exercise because you
you're either, need yeah, like to preparing to fight to the other polis, right. Or you're like, you know, just working with your hands. But anyway, his whole theory is that we just drink a lot of water. And so that's why people who were 30 in the 1970s looked like they were 60, and why
they didn't drink enough water.
Yeah. It is remarkable how young people look at given ages.
Right.
Like if you look that's at like the Cheers cast, right? People right. sometimes make this comparison. It's like they're all in their like early 30s.
Yeah. But right.
But they look
right.
terrible.
I mean,
right?
The Friends characters were, I remember they all like turned 30 over the course of the show.
Right. Yeah.
I'm 37 now.
Yeah. Right.
They don't look, but you just always think of yourself as younger.
I guess so. Yeah.
Than you are, I guess.
Yeah, maybe it's the water.
I mean, the pace of life was different. You know, people.
Cigarettes age you. People smoke a lot less now.
That's true.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Yeah, it's true.
Living longer, but for what purpose?
Yeah. For no joy?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I want to live. You want to live a long time?
No. Yeah. Well,
burnout
we'll see.
Bright.
Yeah, right. Candle that burns twice as bright, you know?
I want to live forever. I don't want to die, but unless I'm like in pain or a burden to people, or like I yank the cord off at the end. Don't give me that awful elder care. Just shoot me. Just be done with me. When I'm done.
Okay.
I don't want to. I know you have objections to that, but
I mean, I
don't want to be kept alive in.
I understand
bad.
It. You know, you're older, you know, you're by yourself, you're drugged, and people are shoving ice cream down your
throat. I'll still be there. I'll break out of my old folks' home. I'll take the cane and the walker. I'll go over to your old folks' home.
Right.
Break in.
I'll be telling my family, like, the ice cream goblin is back.
Okay,
like,
Grandpa, let's get you to bed. But I'm literally, like, hiding under the bed. I'm going to get him.
Right? They're having the conversation. It's like, maybe it is time to take him to Canada.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Well, you're not sad enough. If you're sad.
If I were a sad teenager.
Then they take you to Canada.
Right, then they could take me to Canada.
Was it Spain that had that awful... assisted suicide case.
Yes, she was sad from a previous suicide attempt.
And she'd attempted suicide because she'd been like gang raped or something.
Yeah.
Oh, that was bad. And they're like, well, don't worry. We fixed it. She's now dead.
She's now dead. Yeah. Well, this is what happens when you start treating people as disposable. You know?
Exactly. People should not.
That's the lesson from The Substance.
Yeah.
Not really, but.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to Euphoria season 3.
I never watched that. It's a little too young and horny for me.
They're horribly miscast, all of them, right? They're supposed to be high schoolers.
Yeah.
But it's like Zendaya and Sydney Sweeney, and I don't know at what time in the distance past Sydney Sweeney actually looked like she could pass for a high schooler. Jacob Elordi, he's like 9 feet tall.
Yeah, that's funny.
But
this is a common thing, though, right? Like you go back and watch like Mean Girls or whatever else, right? Like you never cast high schoolers to play high schoolers.
This is especially, right, Glee or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think the quarterback, Corey Monteith, the main character, like Will Schuster, the teacher coach, were like the same age in real life or something. But at least in that show or those shows, often they're in actual high school scenarios. Euphoria, they're in also just very like they're all drug dealers and they're all having just an absurd amount of sex that well beyond the quantity that the average like adolescent is having in high school, I suspect.
Yeah,
but. So they're doing adult, but I guess it's supposed to be like this is the way high schoolers view themselves as this important, or their lives are this arch or whatever. I don't know. It's good though. I like it.
Okay.
Yeah. It had a really effective. This is an play within a play type thing. This is a great.
I love those.
Hate that in the theater, but in like episodes of television or a movie, I love when they do a production about the thing itself. Like Avatar, The Last Airbender, the cartoon show has a great episode of this, the Ember Island Players, where they go watch a play about the Avatar, about the adventures they've been on, and it's the fire, but yeah, the Fire Nation all, does it wrong, and it's right, it's right, like right. all these in jokes about like
right.
at one point a little girl comes up to Zuko and goes, "Your Zuko costume is pretty good, but your scar's on the wrong side." My scar is not on the wrong side. That kind right, of, I love right, that kind right, of thing. Right, Euphoria yeah. in its second season has a great one of the character, the girls who's like the normal one. She is a normal, nice girl. She writes a play about how depraved they all are and has the high school perform it. And it's a very, very effective takedown of all the other characters from the person who's just been like nice to the point of taken advantage of by yeah. these utter depraved lunatics.
That's hilarious.
It's pretty good.
I love that.
Yeah.
If you were going to be satirized in a piece of media, what would you want it to be?
That would be interesting. Maybe it would have to be a show about a political news host who yeah. goes insane and murders everyone. One just snaps. You know, political commentary. I'm sick of it.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. I couldn't.
Joker style, you know.
Okay.
This isn't a tragedy. It's a comedy.
Okay, that's pretty.
yeah.
It's pretty deep.
No, I'm just kidding. I love my job. It's all great.
I just couldn't stand the, I wouldn't be able to take having so much attention, me being the main character being satirized.
Good, if
I
were you like better a, not.
Yeah. 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 Okay, don't worry.
I got a bucket of ice cream with your yeah. name on it,
oh,
champ.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Big star.
I'm not going to be able to fit in this podcast star. Booth. What are you doing? It's real sick stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I would have to, a minor character in a book, maybe I could be like.
You be a,
anything minor, beyond that, I just, I wouldn't, character. My fragile ego wouldn't be able to take it. So,
yeah. I was, at one point I was working on, and didn't finish this, some short stories having to do with COVID.
Mm-hmm.
When I thought maybe, now we just kind of ignore COVID in fiction. Like, there's not a lot about COVID.
Completely. Only Eddington has done it right.
Yes.
And everything else just completely forgets it.
But most people just, we just don't want to talk about it. We just don't want to acknowledge that.
Everyone
it
is
happened.
A little embarrassed about how they behaved during that time.
Yes.
Right?
Present company very much included. Yeah.
Because either maybe you were like a mask fanatic.
Yeah.
And, you know, yelled at someone on the street for not yeah. wearing a mask and now yeah. feel bad about that. Or maybe you were the opposite, right? And we're going to a bunch of Moms for Liberty protests about the Target having the social distancing stickers.
Oh,
on the...
speaking of random encounters that makes me think of COVID, of just bad human behavior. In Vegas, which I had a great time in Vegas, fantastic. One dull note in the whole thing. We were getting in an Uber, got in the Uber, shut the door behind me.
Mm-hmm.
And the driver says, "Excuse me, could you not slam that door so loud?"
Mm.
I don't really think I'd slammed it. I'm like, "Oh, sorry." He gave me a whole it was an unending lecture. It was like, he asked me, "Is this a meme? People are just slamming doors now?"
Oh, wow.
Like, wait, I didn't.
Prick. Wow.
Because I grew up, you know, at a time you had to really shut the door, the car door, or it doesn't shut all the way.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Right? Isn't that a thing?
I don't know.
Do people not, is this a thing that people get upset when you shut the, what's going to happen to the car door if you shut it too? It's not going to snap
off. Yeah.
But he would not, I thought we were going to have to get out of the car. He was so upset about it. He was such
Damn.
A baby.
Yeah.
I have never, I don't think in maybe years, done an Uber rating. That guy got one star.
Ooh,
oh, yeah.
That's
I
brutal.
Hit him with the one
that's
star.
Brutal.
Well, I was a verbal flogging yeah. I got for shutting the door. Is this a thing that the youths are
you,
doing?
This reminds you of COVID times of COVID. Where every social interaction was about this. For
can, you not,
rules,
can you not breathe? Can you, we're sitting on a plane and a person, you know, kicks my seat behind me. Can you, your mask is a little below where
oh,
it should be.
Oh, man. Yeah, I remember that on the
I'm going to drive this plane into a building.
I had a guy from like, three rows back on the other side of the train in the Amtrak. He's like, mask! Because I had my mask down around my fucking chin.
Oh. Yeah,
but then they start the coffee
you
service and
everyone
You would have reported
that the neighbors are harboring Jews in
yeah,
their basement.
Absolutely.
You would have done that.
Yeah, absolutely that guy would have, yeah.
The train was a harsh place, the Amtrak. I got, I was letting my mask dangle as I do.
Big mistake.
And the train, one of the actual official train people was like, "Sir, if I see that mask not on your face again, you're never going to be on this train again."
Wow.
I got thrown off the train.
Wow. Yeah. I remember going to a concert so January 2021, I think. So like things were open again. But they made you wear, you could buy drinks, you could drink, but unless the drink was literally at your lips, the staff would come and demand you put the mask up. Yeah, it was.
If I had not been a libertarian prior to this, I would certainly have been a libertarian.
Yeah.
It just shows who is willing to follow stupid rules. And who, if I think the rule is stupid, I know this is not how society works. There are rules and you got to follow them.
Even if they're stupid.
Even if they're stupid. But for some of us, I just can't. If it's stupid, I can't follow it. It makes me want to lose my mind.
Yeah.
If it's too stupid for me to respect this source of authority.
It's too stupid. It's too stupid. It's too artificial. Yeah. And it's just like people were coming up with this shit on the fly.
Yes.
Because they want to be able to tell you what to do. It was a dictatorship of people who are neurotic and have a hard time being around other people, realizing they had a brief window where they could organize everyone around their own bullshit, right? It's like, oh, I don't like it when people talk loudly or are too close to me. Right. So now I can tell them to back up, right? Because the government is forcing them to, right? And I'm going to enforce the government
restriction. I don't like social gatherings, but I also don't like that other people are having fun
without me. And so I'm going to shut down all of society. So I am neither, you know, anxious or experiencing FOMO. Yeah, that's what they did. That's what they took from us.
Yep.
Yeah, it's interesting because, yeah, COVID, pandemics generally don't stick in cultural memory, right?
Spanish flu, barely even discussed, yeah. Even though many massive death toll.
Yeah.
Massive.
By the...
globally.
Globally, yeah, it outpaced World War II, right? Yeah. How many of those people died of Spanish flu versus with Spanish
right.
flu? There actually is a very credible theory that... a lot of the Spanish flu deaths were they treated with, I guess, aspirin at the time, which made it worse. And so you had more deaths.
Interesting.
Yeah. So kind of like the vaccine for today. But, but yeah, like what is a piece of media about the Spanish flu? They had the same mask mandate debates, right? Completely memory hold. Everyone just kind of wants to forget about it. I don't know.
Or I guess there was like a lot of media about the Black Death is something that's kind of...
Yeah, that's true.
That's like if you take a early modern, you know, AP European history, right? That's kind of where you start.
Yeah, that's true. That
was a bad one.
That was a bad one.
Not
yeah, but
one.
Now for the most part, if you're going to have a plague, it's like zombie stuff or something, right? Yeah, so...
Is there something about... We just want to forget. It's difficult to portray. It's not fun to portray people as sick.
Yeah.
So you just don't want to do it.
I guess because there's no... It doesn't...
The enemy is invisible.
Yeah. It doesn't... I mean, there is cool naturalistic fiction you could do with something like that.
Right.
An invisible, unthinking enemy, right?
Right.
I guess there's just like not enough... maybe conflict and for it to, you know, people get sick and they die. There's no rhyme or
I mean, we've talked about, I think I talked about The Stand a couple weeks ago and we talked, you know, that's a great book about a plague.
Right.
Plague storyline. Contagion movie is so good. I don't know if you ever saw that.
It's that's why you have to ramp up the apocalypticism of it because like people responding to like slightly changing their ways because people are sick. Like, yeah, it's maybe not as interesting to portray, right?
Yeah.
People's whole lives don't change because of a flu epidemic until this most recent one.
Yeah.
So maybe that's part of it.
But
you know, something else,
it never happened.
Something else I was thinking of. Tell me if you think this is true. I'm wondering if because of like HIPAA stuff, you don't see people who are sick and dying that much, right? And so it's like for want of a better word, the drama of the pandemic is reduced because you just don't get those media images, right?
Interesting. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, we're all sick on the inside.
We're all sick on the inside.
Yeah. There's that.
No, you're hungover, so that's when you would say that. Yeah.
All right. What else we got? Anything?
Is there any other?
What else is
going on politically?
See, that's the thing. It's just all about this stupid war that we don't even want.
Such a strange war too, both because of the lack of, no one really understands why it's happening, the lack of propaganda leading up to it, and then now the nature of the conflict itself, which is just like bombing, planes and missiles, right?
Yeah.
There's no, I think like the people, like that was what was an interesting feature of the Ukraine war when it first started was like, oh, there's actually like soldiers in uniforms and tanks.
That was a,
shooting
a war
at each
war.
Other. Yeah, it's a war war, right?
Oh, and,
yeah.
And troop mobilizations.
Right.
And then
yeah.
the holding of territory.
Yes, right.
The,
yeah.
the line that they have keeps advancing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little more understandable, right?
I've changed my perspective on that conflict a little bit over time.
Oh, yeah?
Because at first I was very much opposed to giving too much support at all to Ukraine because they need to settle and they're going to lose territory and that sucks. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to defeat this Russia and it's not really our business to be involved. And so I think they had – my perception at the beginning was that Zelensky had unrealistic expectations for the course of this. It was just going to result in tons of people dying. Mm-hmm. And at the end, they're going to have to sign something that says now this part of the country that identifies as Russian, speaks Russian and wants to be part of Russia is going to be part of Russia. Why is that worth American tax dollars being spent to prevent that? Mm-hmm. That was my standpoint. But over time, frankly, Zelensky has, I think, become more reasonable in his expectations and the Russian side just completely unreasonable. And they do seem like they want to continue the conflict until they conquer the entire country.
Yeah.
And the other side offered a lot of concessions and the Russian side said, okay, thanks, and kept going. And Trump really tried to be, you know, we met with Putin. The guy just wants to conquer Ukraine. And at which point then I'm like, well, then we're going to make it hurt. If they want to resist their entire country being conquered, they want to fight and they just want some money to do that. And Russia is our enemy. So I don't know why we should just let them. If now they're being unreasonable, you want to take the whole country. Okay. We should, I guess we should make it hurt more if they want to fight.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yes, I mean, I agree with your assessment of the conflict. I would still be opposed to our own intervention there in supporting Ukraine. I mean, the Europeans, it's their neighborhood. They should do that instead.
Yes, they should take care of it. It's there.
But I did read some books about Ukraine to better understand the conflict. And the impression you get is like basically post-Soviet breakup, Russia, you know, its leaders are going through all sorts of like, well, how do we rebuild ourselves as a great power? You know, maybe it's we're going to be the center of the Russian speaking world or we're going to be a new economic bloc or whatever else and on and on and on. It's basically none of these visions can work without them dominating Ukraine. And they can't dominate Ukraine if Ukraine is a democracy that periodically votes to have a different foreign policy than what they want.
Right.
And so it's like that really reinforced my mind that, like, I don't know, sometimes the anti-interventionist people and the tankies or whoever else, you don't have to be a tankie to be against, our intervention there, obviously. But this idea that, like, oh, Ukraine just, like, they want to, you know, they're pushing to be part of an aggressive alliance or whatever else. And it's like, they should give up that dream. And then they won't have any problems with Russia. And it's like, well, no, because Russia will always have a problem with Ukraine having political freedom because political freedom prevents them from dominating that country. Right.
Yes.
And so I get why the war is still going on and why they can't just say like, OK, yeah, we'll divide the territory. And that's your side of the line. That's our side of the line. Now.
Right. Right. If we could do that, I would just be for doing that because war is bad and people are dying. And even though that's not ideal, we should do that so that people stop
dying.
But
Russia's never going to accept anything
not.
That still has an independent Ukraine over here making its own decisions, right?
Correct. And that's become clearer over... Maybe that was clear to certain people from the start. It's become clearer to me over the course of the conflict.
Yes. What do you think explains the right-wing hatred of Zelensky?
I don't know. I get it. I also found it obnoxious at the beginning that like, okay, I don't, this is a
oh, that is his conflict. Kind of lionization. Yeah.
Well, and it's like, why? It's not our responsibility. Like we're giving you, we're just keep writing checks. You're not going to defeat Russia.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to win this. You're not going to kick all of the Russians out of your country. Mm-hmm. No one, we have no plan to do that. Your military advisors have no plan to do that. It's not so his rhetoric about the direction the war was taking was so pathologically unrealistic.
Yeah.
But it didn't make me. And also, you know, he's in the course of this war, he's suspended the, right, they postponed the election, yeah, suspended the opposition party, you know, it's not...
Yeah, they've cracked down on the Orthodox Church there. And,
right, none of that is like, you know...
He's not a
hero of liberal views.
Right,
but,
yeah.
But some people on the right that avoid the reality that, okay, but the country did get attacked. It got invaded.
This is what happens when you start a war.
It is the invaded party.
Yeah.
The invaded party is in the right
because
they got invaded. And none of the, well, they shouldn't have done, blah, 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 stop.
Doesn't matter.
None of that justifies the country being invaded.
Right.
And also, I don't, like, the Russian government is bad.
Yes.
Is, like, very despotic. Mm-hmm. Vladimir Putin's rise is not good.
Yeah.
Russia's increasing authoritarian, expansionist aims and China's are the twin problems we face as a globe.
Yeah.
Those, and it's two individuals who are bad, and they are bad, and there's no way around it.
Yeah.
I don't want World War III. We have to try to do something to contain or stop them without direct conflict. And so one of those ways is maybe some amount of money for this opposite. You know what I mean?
But yeah, I mean, I guess.
I'm open to other ideas. There's not a lot we can do at the end of the day.
No. I feel like...
And it's not worth spending our significant sums of money or putting Americans in harm's way, but...
So, I mean, definitely the...
But they are bad.
The war in Ukraine reveals that, you know, Putin has a, you know, aggressive... He's a bad guy.
Yes.
Aggressive government with aims on countries beyond his borders.
Yes.
But the war has also made me less worried about a Russian threat, given how poorly it's gone for them. Like, the fact that they can't crush Ukraine is kind of... It should be incredibly embarrassing and is incredibly embarrassing for them.
Well, as Richard Hanania says, their power comes from the fact that they look so large on a map. But they're actually not.
It's like completely incompetent. Yes. Yeah. That's funny. It is... So that's an interesting person to make that point. Because I remember right at the very beginning of the war, he had some big long post about how Ukraine was going to get wiped away immediately
because they're
like
happen.
Too gay to fight.
Yeah.
Like literally, that was his argument.
Yeah, but now he's become a big
Ukraine. Yeah,
fan.
I mean, he's gone through many different ideological
and still will.
Yeah, and many more to come. Many more to come. It's made me less concerned about Russia because they can't do the work, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, say what you will about our, you know, quagmire that we've gotten ourselves into in Iran. It's like, we can blow up a bunch of shit.
Oh, we can destroy everyone.
Expertly, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's glorious.
Yeah.
Operation
right.
Spectacular Raging Hard-On.
Oh, damn it. Sorry, I just remembered another source of metal album names from a band that could have been good.
We'll have a part two someday.
We'll have a part two when the next war starts.
All right, we'll leave it there.
Okay, very good.
See you guys next week.